Senate Clerk, 82.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee for Thursday, April 21st. This is the last day to hear Senate bills, and so we are got quite a few on the agenda. I announced earlier that we will unfortunately not be following the order of the agenda because we're waiting for paperwork and a couple bills. So we hope to have that by the end of this hearing. So we may have to recess if we are still waiting, but hopefully by the time we hear some of the other bills that are ready, that paperwork will be done. So we are going to start off with a work session on Senate Bill 82, and I will open up with a motion, and then we can have a discussion on that. Senator Przanski?
Madam Chair, I move adoption of Senate Bill 82-4, dated the 18th of April this year.
Okay, Senator Przanski moves to adopt the dash four amendments into Senate Bill 82, dated 4-18-11. And first I'm going to ask Palmer Mason from the Department of Environmental Quality to come up and talk about this amendment. This is an amendment that the chair worked with. We had a work group. And so this is a product of that work group. Senator Thompson was part of that work group. And maybe, Palmer, you can talk a little bit about that. Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name is Palmer Mason. I'm with the Department of Environmental Quality. Yes, the chair is correct. There was a work group that worked on Senate Bill 82, and the result of that work was ultimately the Dash 4 amendment. The work group went through several issues that are reflected in the Dash 4 amendment. There was work done on actually this. The work by the work group was looked at the credit language that's in the Dash 4 amendment. And the credit language would allow manufacturers who sell in excess, collect in excess of their minimum recycling obligations to sell or transfer or bank, if you will, that excess credits. And those credits can be applied to a future year's goals. That language was largely intact when the work group got it, and so the focus of the work group was more on the addition of other products to the Oregon eCycles program, and those products are printers and computer peripherals. Printers are defined as something that makes a reproduction or is a multifunctional device, so it makes a reproduction and does some other things such as faxing or scanning or some other electronic purpose like that. And then computer peripherals are defined as keyboards and mice, either wireless or corded, or their cords themselves. There was discussion about adding those products, and those products are brought into the Dash 4 amendments. They're brought in two different ways. The printers are devices where the manufacturers have to register with the department and set up programs or join existing programs to collect and recycle those products. The computer peripherals are treated a little differently. They are counted the computer peripheral manufacturers do not have to set up individual programs. The devices are collected at all the other collection sites in the program, and then that weight, that tonnage, is allocated across all the manufacturers, including manufacturers of devices like TVs. And we suggested this approach to the work group and to Senator Dingfelder as the best way to go, because there are so many manufacturers of computer peripherals. There's hundreds of manufacturers of mice and keyboards. It would just be an overwhelming task to try to register all those manufacturers and track that. So that was the approach that's taken in the Dash 4. And let me get my notes here. Let's see if I've covered all the provisions. So the credit concept that's in the Dash 4 amendment kicks in as of this calendar year, 2011, and computer peripherals and printers would start as of January 1, 2015. And I can shed light on the fiscal. There's no fiscal impact to the department as of this first biennium, 2011-13. And then 2013-15, there is a fiscal impact of around $60,000, but that would be covered by the revenue that would be collected from the registration of the computer manufacturers. So hopefully that will cover the amendment.
Great. And I should say, Beth, did you want to add anything? He talked about the fiscal, but you may want to say that on the record, and then also about if there for this amendment is any revenue impact as well.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, members, 482-4, there is a fiscal statement, as Palmer just mentioned, and no revenue impact.
Okay. So are there any questions for Palmer while we have him up here? Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, thank you. I was invited to be on this work group. It was my first work group as a senator and learned a lot. The process, I thought, was very good. The business folks and everybody there did a great job, I thought, very willing to look at different issues and come up with a pretty good solution. My only objection to this process has been some of the people that it kind of kept out of the loop and hurt a few Oregon businesses that do this process now, and this might take them out of that loop and we'll lose some Oregon jobs. I understand DEQ's had some conversations with, I tried to do an amendment that would help fix that problem, but ends up being interstate commerce and all those issues, but DEQ said they've had conversations and will at least talk to those folks and try to soothe that over the best they can.
Right. Thank you, Senator Thompson, for bringing that up. And Palmer, could you put on the record, because we did have those conversations, and I think that would be helpful.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Thompson. So what the senator is referring to is there were folks who wanted to see how the program is run, have it run differently. And specifically, I think they're most interested in having the Oregon eCycles program do something like the Washington program does. And the Washington program is very similar to the Oregon eCycles program. It collects the same devices. Our per capita collection rates are very similar, although we should all take credit for the fact that Oregon beats Washington on a per capita collection basis. And their issue is at the end of the year, when all the tons are in, all the collected tons are in, is that something called a true-up would happen. So all the collected tons would be totaled and then be apportioned back to each of the manufacturers on a percentage basis. And this is a little different than what we do under the current program, where DEQ the year before a program year assigns each manufacturer a return share by weight, a tonnage that manufacturer is supposed to achieve. So long as that manufacturer achieves that, if they're in a independent plan, they don't pay a penalty. If they're in the state contractor program, the penalty language doesn't apply. But the only obligation that manufacturers have under the current program is to meet that tonnage and then continue their operations year-round. And so you continue collections year-round, but unlike Washington, which also continues the collections year-round, but then takes a total and says, we're going to allocate that total back among the manufacturers on a percentage basis as opposed to an absolute number of pounds. They are the folks who talked to Senator Thompson believe that would be a better approach that would lead to more business opportunities for those processors and those collectors. What I told the senator and those folks is the department's willing to have that discussion, but there's a couple of caveats. One, that's a discussion that requires all the stakeholders, including the manufacturers who bear the principal responsibility for a program. They end up paying the bills for this, so they certainly have to be at the table. The other collectors, the other processors, the environmental community, anybody else who would be interested in it. That kind of change, while might be good and is worthy of discussion, is a pretty fundamental shift in what Oregon does, and every stakeholder ought to be in the discussion about that. And they agreed that made sense. And also I added that, you know, our position is we're open to that. That may actually lead to better collections and maybe more opportunity for processors and collectors. And if all the stakeholders or most of the stakeholders can agree, then maybe we can come back to the legislature and have that discussion. Because I will end by saying a change in the program in that way will require a change in the law.
All right. Thank you, Palmer. Any other questions?
I have a question.
Yep.
Palmer, this is it's a small point, but I just would like to clarify it. On page 9 of the amendment, it says that the printer does not include a device used to make reproductions that can also make labels. Now, I have a printer upstairs, a great big one, which we all have, and we make these labels. I assume that these aren't the kind of labels you were talking about, printed labels?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, the point of that language is to exclude a device that would, simply just make labels. And so...
On its own?
Right.
Freestanding?
Okay. Right, right.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that clarification.
Okay. Any other questions for Palmer?
Those are not this big.
No. Okay. There's a motion on the table to adopt the Dash 4 amendments. Is there any further discussion? Are there any objections? Okay. Seeing none, the amendments are adopted, and I'll...
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 82 as amended by the Dash 4s to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Brzozinski moves Senate Bill 82 as amended with the Dash 4s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator House?
Aye.
Senator
Brzozinski?
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
Aye.
Senator Olson?
Aye.
Senator Selvig?
Aye.
With that, the measure passes, and I will carry the bill. Okay, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 82. And I think Palmer's going to be coming up next again, so I'll make sure he's still in the room.
He is.
Okay. And with that, I'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 945. And Beth, if you want to talk about it, I think we have a Dash 3 amendment. Is that correct?
That's correct. The Dash 3 amendment was in front of the committee when you heard the bill on March 31st. There's a fiscal impact statement in your packet. No revenue impact.
Okay. So I will take a motion.
Madam Chair, I move for the adoption of the Dash 3 amendments in the Senate Bill 945.
Okay, Senator Brzozinski moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments into Senate Bill 945. And again, I will ask Palmer to come up just in case there's any questions. Since this is a gut and stuff, so to speak, one, I thought if you just wanted to point out any changes, I think it's pretty similar to what we saw before, and then maybe discussion of the fiscal.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Palmer Mason. I'm with the Department of Environmental Quality. I'll start by speaking to the fiscal. There is no fiscal impact to DEQ to implement this bill in the 2011-2013 biennium. In the 2013-2015 biennium, there is a $20,000 impact that would be paid for by federal grants and existing dollars that the department has relating to toxic reduction, since the purpose of this bill is to reduce heavy metal runoff into our water and aquatic environment. And there's no new staff that would be involved in the implementation of this particular piece of legislation were it to pass. That probably speaks to the fiscal side. The reason there's no fiscal impact, and this I think also speaks to the changes in the bill, is there were changes made in this amendment versus the earlier version of the bill, many of them with the intent of trying to reduce the fiscal impact to the department. And the biggest change was a shift in the effective date of the law from January 1 of 2014 to July 1 of 2014. And that six-month difference allows the department to look at the work that's done by the Department of Ecology in Washington in implementing a similar piece of legislation. And if you will, more or less piggyback on that work in terms of their rulemaking, the documents that they develop for applications for exemptions, their certification process, the other things that are in the bill. And by doing that, we were able to greatly lower the fiscal impact to the department. There were some other changes, but I think that's probably the key one. that was made to, again, try to help with the fiscal impact.
And just to follow up on that, I think the Senator Presenti, who had asked a question about the paperwork or the forms that would be required, and I do see that you have that in the fiscal statement there, because there was concern by the manufacturers that they would have to do different paperwork and it would be onerous, and we did direct the agency to make sure and coordinate with the state of Washington, so we're using similar language and look at the templates that they're using again, so we can make sure that we're working consistently with our neighbors to the north and south. Okay, any questions or comments for I have a feeling that there might be a question over on this side.
Thank you, Palmer. And in our fiscal impact statement, it says that DEQ anticipates utilizing Section 319 grant monies to fund the rulemaking program startup and personnel costs. And these funds are contingent on Environmental Protection Agency approval. What happens if you don't get the approval?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, if we aren't able to use the $319, then we believe we can use existing toxic reduction money that we have in the agency to pay for the work. And I say that because with the changes that we've made in the bill, the fiscal impact has gotten to the point where we think it's definitely absorbable.
Follow up.
Okay, follow up.
If you use the funds from this toxic program, what other programs in this toxic fund will not be done?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, that's a good question. I think I'll answer it, but also answer it this way by saying we feel like this is really important work, and we would be shifting away from lower priorities to serve the higher priority of implementing this bill. I think you recall from the last committee we had a discussion about copper and its presence in urban stormwater runoff, and it turns out that brake pads are one of the larger sources for that in urban stormwater. So we feel like this would be a priority action for the department. It means, though, on the other hand, you're right, there'd be less work done on other chemicals, probably less outreach on our part to the regulated community and to others on toxic reduction, because we'd be focusing on this work.
Hello. So wouldn't that then lead me to believe that there is a higher fiscal impact that you're than you're putting down?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I guess I'm not sure I follow the question. I think what I'm saying is all things being equal, we're going to shift from lower priority work to higher priority work, not ask for any more resources, and we will do less of what we were doing to focus on this. So I think it means the fiscal impact is about the same. But I also want to be clear, this doesn't entail a fiscal impact, but not in the first biennium.
Okay. Any other questions?
No. Okay. Thank you.
And I think there was an S left out. I think it's the toxics program.
Yes.
The toxics program.
The toxic
program. Anyway, just little things. But okay, with that, any other questions for Palmer? Okay. So we have a motion on the table to adopt the dash threes. Is there any objection?
Yes.
Okay. So noted. Ms. Olson, any other objections? Okay. The amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 945 as amended by the dash threes to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Przanski moves Senate Bill 945 as amended with the dash threes to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, clerk will call the roll, please.
Senator Hatch?
Aye.
Senator Przanski?
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Olson?
No.
Aye.
Madam Chair, yes. I serve notice of a possible minority report.
Okay, so noted. With that, the measure passes, and I will carry the bill. Okay, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 945. And are we ready for 942?
Yep.
Okay. So we will go ahead and open up a work session on Senate Bill 942. And Beth, I think we have a dash ones.
There's a dash one amendment, which was in front of you on Tuesday when you heard the bill. No revenue impact, and I've just received the fiscal impact statement, so I'll distribute that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So this, if you see by the fiscal, this is definitely going to Ways and Means. So anyway. We'll see if there's any questions. before we send this down the Ways and Means. Would you like to make a motion, Senator? And we can get that going.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I move the dash ones into Senate Bill 942.
Thank you. Senator Prezonsky moves to adopt the dash one amendments into Senate Bill 942. Is there any discussion or any questions? We have somebody here from the Secretary of State's office if we have any questions. Senator Thompson, you look like you have a question.
What? Madam Chair.
Yeah.
I just, means we got the fiscal, I guess the only discussion I would have that, I believe this is a good idea that's worth looking at, but with a fiscal of $329,000, I think it's kind of out of our reach when we're cutting schools and cutting all the other funding we're doing, but just to get that on record. Thank you.
Okay. And we can also send it down without recommendation if you would prefer. Yeah? Okay. So we'll adopt the amendments. Any objections to adopting the amendments? The amendments are adopted.
And Madam Chair, it sounds like maybe you, I'm not sure if you want a do pass or no recommendation.
Matter. It sounds like the committee is will be unanimous about to send it down there without recommendations. Is that correct?
All right. So, Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 942 as amended to the floor without recommendation, mm-hmm. and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. Senator Prezonsky moves Senate Bill 942 as adopted with the dash one amendments without recommendation to the floor, and then it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any objections to that? Okay, seeing none, motion carries. I will not assign a carrier because it will go down to Ways and Means. And that's the end of Senate Bill 942 work session. Okay. Next up is Senate Bill 941.
Senate Bill 941 has a dash 3 amendment in your packet, which was in front of the committee on Tuesday when the representative from DOJ came and talked about what was different in the dash 3. I've just received both fiscal and revenue statements. Both are really just light statements for the purpose of moving this bill to Ways and Means, and I'll distribute that.
Okay. We do have somebody from the Department of Justice here. Senator, if you could make a motion, and then we'll call him up for the discussion.
All right. Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the dash 3 amendments in the Senate Bill 941.
Okay. Senator Prezonsky moves to adopt the dash 3 amendments into Senate Bill 941. We do have Department of Justice, if there's any questions at all. Would you like to ask the Department any questions? Okay. All right. Seeing none. Any discussion? Any objections to adopting this amendment?
The dash three.
The dash three. Okay. None. No objections. The amendments are adopted.
And Madam Chair, did you want to have with a due pass on this one or not?
Sure. We'll do a due pass.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 941 as amended by the dash threes to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
So this is another one, obviously, that's going to Ways and Means based on the fiscal impact. So there is a motion on the floor. Is there any discussion? Is there any objections? No? Okay, seeing.
I vote no on this.
Okay. Any other objections?
Are you going to vote?
Well, I.
So it's going to Ways and Means.
We have to. I'll call the roll. Why don't you go ahead?
Aye.
No.
Aye.
No.
Aye. With that, the motion carries, sends down to Ways and Means. Again, not a carrier because it is going to Ways and Means. With that, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 941, and moving right along, I will open up a work session on Senate Bill 960. Senator Prezonsky?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 960 without any recommendation back to the Senate President for re-referral to any other committee.
Any? Senator Prezanski moves Senate Bill 960 without recommendation back to the Senate President for re-referral to another committee.
Any other committee.
I do want to make a couple of comments on this, as we did have a lot of comments on this bill, and this will be referred to, we are asking that it be referred to rules, and there has been, we did not adopt any amendments. I should just clarify, this is still the original bill. There has been an interest by several of the members up here in participating in a work group. I know Senator Thompson has expressed an interest, along with Senator Olson, to work with the parties to see if we can come up with a different version before the end of the session. And so with that, we'll see if there's any other further discussion.
Senator Thompson, since this bill has your name on it. Yeah, and I'd just like to comment on the process that I wasn't involved with this over the interim. I got involved with this as a carrier and as a rookie senator, because not too many experienced veterans in this building want to put their name on a land use bill. They're a lot smarter than I was. You know, we make those mistakes. I have some experience at the county level dealing with land use, and so that's why I put my name on this. I spent a lot of time with Senator Dingfelder on the work group. Again, interesting process. All the parties were there that I knew. I'm sure people weren't in the room that were probably there during the interim, but we moved the bill quite a ways, but evidently not far enough. It still needs some work. I am willing to spend more time on that bill. I personally would have been, you know, a little happier if we could have put all the bills that had to do with wineries and this activities on farmlands in one piece. I think that would have been a better process altogether, but sometimes things don't work out like you think they should. So I will gladly work with the next step of 960 and stay tuned, and we'll see what happens.
Thank you, Senator Thompson. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. Okay, with that, I'll just ask if there's any objection to this motion, which is referring this bill to any other committee.
Yeah, I've never heard that one.
Madam Chair, I would object to it going to the Education Committee.
Boy, I think we were thinking about that one.
Yeah.
Okay, so noted your objection. With that, the motion carries, and we will close the work session on Senate Bill 960. Moving right along. I think we'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 829.
Madam Chair, I move the -5 amendments in the Senate Bill 829.
Okay, Senator Prezanski moves the -5 amendments dated 4-18-11 be adopted into Senate Bill 829. Is there any discussion?
I just have
Senator Thompson.
Chair Dingfelder, thank you. I just, like I said before, I'm not against this bill. I would have liked it better if this, I think it would look better if it had gone out with a complete process, so that I don't hold things up at this level. I will be in favor of 829, but reserve the right to change my vote on the floor.
All right.
If things get, how things look now and how things might look later might be a little different, so I reserve that right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Senator Thompson. Actually, and I should have let Beth speak first, because, of course, she has to say something about the fiscal and revenue impacts.
Madam Chair,
on the -5.
There is a revenue impact statement, which is in your packet, and a minimal expenditure impact statement as well.
Okay. And we have everybody has both of those. They should have it in their packet. I should learn to always let Beth speak first. Any, Senator Prezanski, did you want to make any comments on the -5s?
No.
Okay. So with that, there's a motion on the table for adoption of the -5s. Any objections? Okay, seeing none, amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 829 as amended by the -5s to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Prezanski moves Senate Bill 829 as amended with the -5s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? I think we've already heard from Senator Thompson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'll say something now. I actually think this is the next step in updating our winery statutes that we have right now. We've embraced the wine industry in the state. It's been over 20 years since we've actually had what I'm going to call a serious look at the statutes that are there. We need to actually acknowledge the virtues and the success of many of our wineries, and knowing that the current cap limit on the upper level of the wineries is limited at 100,000 gallons. Moving it to 150,000 gallons, I think, is appropriate. I also believe that, and knowing that we have a few, only from my understanding from the testimony, four at this point that could possibly qualify to have outright permitted use of a full restaurant. And they're geographically located through the state on the western side of the Cascades. I believe this is an appropriate step to allow not only those wineries, but more importantly, the industry itself, to maintain its position within the industry throughout the region, beyond Oregon, and bringing tourism and other economic growth to our state.
Thank you, Senator. Okay, with that, we have a motion on the floor. The clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Senator Kozlowski?
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
Aye.
Senator Olson?
Aye.
Aye. With that, the motion passes, and Senator Prezonsky, would you like to carry this on the floor?
Yes, please.
Okay. So noted that Senator Prezonsky will carry Senate Bill 829. With that, we will close a work session on Senate Bill 829. And what's up next? Senate Bill 536. Open up a work session on Senate Bill 536. Beth, if you can tell us which amendments we are looking at.
Madam Chair, members of the committee previously adopted two amendments on this bill, the dash twos and the dash fives. You've had the fiscal impact statement on the dash twos. I've just received the statement on the dash fives, and there's no revenue impact.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 536 as previously amended by the adoption of dash twos and the dash fives to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Prezonsky moves Senate Bill 536 as previously amended with the dash twos and the dash fives to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Hess.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I thank the committees for their patience here. We've been futzing with technical amendments for a long time, and I think it's time to call the question. I've learned a lot about plastics and pollution over the past couple of months, and I feel even more strongly now than I did about this bill and efforts to deal with this problem. And I would submit even opponents who may not go for this approach have learned a lot about this issue, too. And I think it's interesting to me that we've established that there's a problem, with 12% of our garbage that's picked up by Solve on the beaches is plastic bags. We know that's a problem, and now really what we're arguing about, I think, in a healthy way is how to get at that problem. And so I'm delighted to see this move forward.
Okay, excellent. Do you want to have Palmer come up and answer any questions?
I think the fiscal report speaks for itself. The dash fives took out the high fiscal costs of the dash twos, and so I think there's general agreement on that. So.
Okay, well, we have a motion.
I'd like to speak to the issue.
Yeah. Any further discussion?
Yes, I also have learned quite a bit about this. I love to do research. It's a lot of fun. One thing I believe in Oregon that we should never do is start this slippery slope that we get on to ban things. We are a resolute state that loves to recycle. As a matter of fact, a few weeks ago in the Oregonian, there was an article about a company in Tigard that recycles plastic. And they were able to get recapture 120,000 gallons of oil from this plastic. I have a meeting with them tomorrow to talk to them. They would love to recycle plastic bags. And that's what we're going to talk about. And in Oregon, we're pioneers of recycle. And when you come to a situation where you want to ban about 15% of the total trash that we pick up and leave the rest of the plastic around there, the rest of the plastic bags. We can put ice in there, and that plastic bag has ice in it, so it's legal. But if the plastic bag next to it has screws in it, it's not legal. It really gets us going down a slippery slope. So I would prefer that we recycle and do an education system on recycling. Once again, I love paper. Paper's wonderful, except that it's got to cut trees down that would make my tuba fours. And we're not making tuba fours. Another concern I have is this: our push towards reusable recyclable bags, which are made in China with polypropylene, and it's made with oil. And that bothers me that we pass a bill that destines our money, Oregonians' money, to companies in China. And so for that reason, I still am a firm no on this bill.
Okay. Any other discussions?
Madam Chair, I'd just like to echo...
Senator Thompson.
I'd just like to echo Senator Olson and look at more of a curbside, total curbside plastic recycle that would do a broader range of recycling plastic.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, we do have a motion on the floor. We had previously adopted the dash twos and fives, correct? So we don't need to do that. So we're just voting on the amended version, and the clerk will call the roll, please.
Senator House?
Aye.
Senator Bogomsky?
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Olson?
No.
Chair Dinkfelder?
Aye. With that, the motion carries.
Madam Chair.
You want to say something?
I serve notice of a potential minority report.
Okay, so noted for the record. With that, the motion carries. And, Senator Hess, would you like to carry this bill?
If there's nobody else, we'll do it.
Okay, so noted. And I did close the work session, but just to make sure. Okay, now that we're through that, we're moving right along. So do you see, Jeff? Okay, we're going to take a quick recess before we move on to Senate Bill 688 because we are waiting for some paperwork. We are out of recess now for the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee, and I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 8688. And Beth, I think we have the dash two amendments in front of us.
That is correct. There's a dash two amendment. There's a revenue statement in your packet. We do not yet have a fiscal impact statement. There's also a chart that I just distributed that I believe someone is going to speak to.
Okay, so I will take a motion on this amendment.
Madam Chair, I move the dash two amendments into Senate Bill 688.
Okay, Senator Przanski moves the dash two amendments into Senate Bill 688. And as part of the discussion, I will ask Jeff Bissonnette and to come up, and also I will ask the Department of Energy Director Bob Repine to please come up and talk a little bit about these amendments. I will tell you that the chair participated in a work group with about 30 members of the energy community and the co-chairs of the House committee. This was a couple weeks ago, and we had asked the Department of Energy to come up with recommendations based on criteria about phasing out some of the elements of the tax credit. So I've asked the Department of Energy to be here to discuss that, and Jeff Bissonnette was also a key member of that task force. So, gentlemen, if you can review that, and I just want to say Beth did an excellent job on your staff measure summary, going section by section of the amendment to tell you exactly what this does. And just a reminder, this tax credit was set to sunset, and what we did is we wanted to evaluate if we were going to make recommendations to move the tax credit forward, what elements would stay in and what elements we were going to recommend phasing out. And you should have a chart in front of you also that summarizes that as well. Whoever wants to go first?
I think we'll have
the director go first.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. For the record, I am Bob Repine, the acting director of the Department of Energy. My comments regarding the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 688, I think the committee and the staff and the work group that was assembled laid out some pretty clear definitions of what might be good to change or modify to keep the RETC program in place as we have enjoyed it for so many years. In the bill, I want to just point out some issues, comments about some of the issues, and this can be continued on as the bill moves on to its next stop along the way. I think it's in the tax committee. The bill, if it's a bill, suggests a cap. One of the concerns the agency has is, and this is more background for the members, so I apologize if I'm repeating things you've heard already.
And this is a cap on the overall tax credit for the RETC?
Correct. Okay. A cap on the RETC. Currently, you have a cap on the manufacturing BETC credits, on the business energy tax credit, and you also have a cap on the renewable portfolio of the BETC credit. So if you applied a cap on this program to help control the amount of money that goes out, currently the program, because it's not capped, it is a after the fact awarding of the credit. So there are people who are out there today buying appliances, getting solar panels installed on their roof. After they complete that activity, they send to us effectively the copy of the receipt or the payment in full of whatever they've acquired. That then is determined to put a value to, if an appliance is already prescriptive because it says for a certain type of appliance you get X amount of dollars. On solar applications on single-family residences, it's based on the production or the energy produced at that PV system. So we would do a calculation. But it's done more in the back end of this deal. Whereas the BETC program, with the cap in place, because we have to be able to manage the amount of money that's going out the door. So when we get to the point where we are reaching that cap limit, that we don't have people out there expecting something that they're not going to receive. So a concern, and I think it can be worked out, there would have to be a change of kind of the methodology of how the agency awards RETCs if a cap's put in place. We would have to have something that would allow citizens to know that if they were to pursue some element of this work pertaining to the credit program, that there would be some assurance that when they completed that work, that the credit would be there for them. So, again, because there's no cap, that's not a concern today. In the future, if you put a cap on it, it would be a concern that I think citizens would be upset about, quite frankly, and I suspect be calling everybody. So we would want to figure out some methodology to accomplish to help with that. The other part I'd like to point out to you, Madam Chair and committee members also, is you have a February 1st reporting date for the agency, and we understand that, and that's not a problem. What it is, it's a timing issue. So let me take you back through 2010. If you were a citizen of the state of Oregon starting January 1 of 2010 all the way through December 31st of 2010, you could, at any time, come in and buy something and then say, oh, I think I've got to remember to get my application in. Well, that also extends to the next up till April 15th because it's tied with the tax season. So not only are we're not taking any more credits for 2010, but people can still process 2010 credits up till April 15th. So let me give you an example. In 2010, from calendar year 2010, for PV systems, we certified 950 of them. For the first 2 months of 2011, for applications that came in that were still for systems that were installed in 2010, we saw another 250. That doesn't now still, and we don't have a number of how many came in since February to April, so let's assume there was another 250. If the timing of the report is to try to reflect what activity has taken place for that exposure to the amount of money that's going to be withdrawn from the state's revenue stream, then we have to either you have to be understanding that the information we would share with you on February would be a partial of the activity, because we won't, not unless we change the process that says you have until April 15th to submit your credit to us to get it for the 2010 year. If you said move it to the end of the year, and you say you'd have to have all your applications would have to be processed and improved before the end of the year, then we could give you a 100% report. So it's a sequencing issue that might want to work through, but just so you know that we understand what you're trying to get to, and the report can be accomplished, but we assume that you're looking for a complete factual report of how many credits were issued that would have some exposure to that calendar year.
Okay.
The other part is that the bill also allows flexibility for the department. We appreciate that, and I think at the end of the day you'll find we can be much more pliable and keeping up with the industry changes so we can make sure investments match up with the right amount of money that should be awarded to credits. You still have some credits that are defined in this law that are still statutory. And so as an example that staff pulled out is currently still, I think, in this statute, it references photovoltaic systems still equal to $3 per watt value. As I think I testified in front of this committee before, in our last rule writing, we figured out a very clever way to not make that $3, with still keeping the spirit of the law. One, it has to do with conversion from AC to DC. So we would advise you, this industry is moving very fast, and having a $3, it would be, if we had the $3 in there today and we were making those awards, you would be coming to me and saying, Director, why are you giving people more systems than they're paying for? We don't want that. So, I'd advise you to try to make sure that the flexibility is not limited by citations in the law. We like the purpose statement that you put on the page 1 of the dash amendment. We think that will give the agency a lot of more clarification and direction on how we go ahead with the program and how we will frame the report that we would offer to you at the end of the following year. I want to make a pitch in some ways. One of the things that you may or may not be aware of, that the RETC program, unlike the Betsy program, has no fees tied to it. And it was done for a reason, particularly for smaller-scale projects. So if somebody was going to receive $40 for an appliance rebate at the time, it would cost to process an application. I think we've come up with it's around $20 for an application processing. So, you know, the question would be, if we were to charge an application fee for $20 and they were going to get $40, would the individual really want the credit anyhow? So one of the things that we're working on right now, and it's becoming a little more tenuous with the federal government. The funds that pay for the RETC program are derived from two sources. One is the energy suppliers assessment, which is kind of the large amount of money that the agency gets to perform most of its technical support and central operations support. It also funds a portion of this. The other half of this program is funded through the SEP program, which is a state energy program that's provided by the federal government. As you all are watching the federal government budget roll out today, right now there is some question whether or not any of the weatherization dollars are going to be available. And at minimum, we already know that it could be receiving as much as a 20% reduction. So one of the things that, again, I don't know if it's this committee or we catch up with another committee, there might be some reason or justification to start thinking about how we might be able to apply some staggered or stair process for application fees. Because some of these projects now, when you're doing solar applications and automobiles, these are $6,000 application credits. So, you know, if you were charging $50 or something for projects of that size, I don't think it should be disruptive for somebody who's going to receive a $6,000 credit. Again, something worth noting, I think. Again, in summary, I think the framework will work. I think there's some details that need to be still worked out in it, but I think all in all, it is a great reflection of the work that you and the co-chairs did with the work group about 3 weeks ago. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Just sending my staff out to go quiet down the rowdy partiers outside of our... Jeff, if you can talk a little bit about the work group, and then we'll see if there's any questions for either of you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. I did participate in the work group that was convened by Chair Dingfelder and the two co-chairs of the House Environment, Energy, Environment, and Water Committee. And the direction was pretty much we want to send a framework, or at least a basic framework, over to joint tax credits. The, you know, money issues, the whether or not the credit actually goes, should be rightly dealt with in that committee. But what we'd like to send over is some sort of policy structure, policy framework that gives that group, that committee, an idea of what we're, of what we're thinking about on a policy level. And so I think that really is the framework that you have before you. The work group had participants from the solar industry, from the energy efficiency industry, from home builders, from consumer advocates like myself, from the Energy Trust of Oregon that delivers incentives for energy efficiency investments and renewable energy investments in the investor-owned utility service territory. We also had representation from consumer-owned utility area representatives who do the same thing in non-investor-owned utility areas. I'm sure I'm probably free.
Taxpayers group.
Tax Fairness Oregon was also at the table. And so while I'm not sure I can represent to you this is a consensus document, what I can do is echo Director Repine's comments that I think this really does capture a lot of the issues that the work group talked about. The theme of it was, you know, the RETC has been around for almost 35 years. It's really time to sort of update it, make it a little bit more relevant, try and make it a little bit more efficient. In doing that, we needed to be sure that the department had a very clear sense of what the legislature was intending to do with the Residential Energy Tax Credit Program, and that is the purpose statement that the director referred to, and I'm pleased that that he likes it. I like it, too. And I think that as we talked about it, what we looked a lot about what the publicly owned utilities and what the ETO really do on behalf of ratepayers. Those entities are really given funds to say, how can we get the biggest bang for the buck on behalf of ratepayers? And they adjust their incentives based on market conditions, based on price of goods, price of installation on various measures, and it works, and people understand it. candidate, and people know kind of what they're getting when they decide to sign up for the program. What we were really trying to do is give ODO both the encouragement and the incentive, I suppose, to see if we can move a little bit toward that model for the department and the residential energy tax credit. There really are a lot of changes that are happening across the industry, not only solar industry, but energy efficiency and others as well. And I appreciate the director's comments that there might be some work still to do in joint tax credits. We expected that. But I think that there's a broad feeling that we're headed in the right direction. I'm glad the department thinks so as well. I'm happy to answer questions, but I do encourage you to pass Senate Bill 688 with the -2 amendments to the Joint Tax Credit Committee for further discussion.
Great. Thank you, gentlemen. I just wanted to mention on the last page of your packet is the revenue impact statement and the changes in this -2. For next year, the cost savings are about $7.5 million, and then the following biennium, it's closer to $20 million and $25 million for 2015-2017. So appreciate significant savings, appreciate the hard work that you all and many of the people in the work group and in this room put in this. So with that, we have a motion on the table, but I'll see if there's any questions for either of these gentlemen. Senator Prezonsky?
No.
He's pointing at Senator Olson. Okay.
I have questions.
I thought I'd look this way first because I figured there'd be questions over here.
Gentlemen, my only concern is I like the process. I like what you've done. It's really good. My biggest concern is when we get into solar voltaic and wind and geothermal, particularly, we should be looking more at that. And we only give, on the RETSI side, we give $600 to $900 and we don't give anything in the ETO area. But when we get into solar voltaic and wind, on a $13,000 investment, we allow the customer to take $11,100 off of their total bill with federal taxes and state. We're very generous on that. And also with the wind system, it looks like they can actually make a $4,500 profit on a $15,000 system. We give, RETSI gives six, and Energy Trust gives nine. That pays for the whole thing, according to the chart I have here from Taxpayer. Assuming it's correct.
Right, that's a big assumption.
The point being is, if we were more in line with our neighbors to the north, some of this tax money we're giving away, we could actually have back into our system that we can use for other programs that desperately need it. And my question would be, when we do a solar electric panel or a wind system, do we do an energy audit on the house to see if it's actually, or on the building to see if it's actually energy efficient before we give away money to lower energy costs?
Madam Chair, committee members, or Senator Olson, no, that's not a criteria. The criteria for the program has been energy produced or energy saved. And in the case of a renewable application, such as a photovoltaic system, it would be how much will that system produce in energy. So the envelope of the structure is not in question. The assumption is the structure has some sense of weatherization competency too, because the structure was built assuming if it was built since the 70s, since the statewide codes have come in, there's assumed levels of insulation or thermal consideration for that structure, but it's not a test for the house or for the applicant.
Jeff, did you want to add something?
Just two brief comments. One is that we actually had some discussion about that in the work group, and did it make sense, did it not? And actually the Energy Trust of Oregon had done a study asking precisely that question, because they were trying to figure out, would that be a way to better target our dollars? And what they came back with was that, I believe I'm quoting the right statistic, but that for households that were looking at installing solar photovoltaic cells, they were 25% more efficient than folks that were looking at doing energy efficiency. So what that said to them is, oh, we have people that are already sort of doing a lot on efficiency, and so The answer they came up with is that is not a good way to target our dollars. And so based on that study, we decided not to include that here. But I do think what you are bringing up is, rather than kind of defining what we put in for different technologies and even specific incentives for particular technologies, things change pretty rapidly, and rather than having the department have to follow kind of a statutory requirement that's set this year, say, and 16 months from now, and the legislature doesn't happen to be in session, there's a big price change, and it makes sense for them to be able to change those incentives. We were trying to give them that flexibility without having to come back to the legislature, 6 or 8 months later and say, hey, we need to change this in order to save some money. Also, by taking a few things out, like appliances, what we were trying to do is saying, use these dollars where they're really going to make the most difference and where they really are going to make a difference in terms of maintaining a market, making a market, and where a market already exists or where a market's been transformed. You don't need to put those dollars there. So we're really kind of, I think, walking down the path that you're laying out, and I'm happy to talk to you afterward to see if we're getting there, if you have specific concerns that we need to more fully consider in the Joint Tax Credit Committee.
Now, my concern is the generosity of the program. That's my concern. And if we weren't quite so generous, one of the comments here on your paper that I have in front of me says growing market will, absent credit, growing market will likely slow. Now, if we were to reduce those credits, maybe cut those credits in half to folks, the market would expand faster because more people could take advantage of it.
And Madam Chair, Senator Olson, that is what the bill calls for in terms of
what page?
Again, I think 10. Thank you.
Yeah, it does. It does reflect the market.
Yeah, it's that the page 11, where the department may, in prescribing criteria, rely on codes, and then also sub 2, take into consider evolving market conditions and prescribing minimum performance criteria and in determining credit amounts. And so, again, we're trying to talk to the department to say things are changing, change the program kind of in a more real-time fashion. Again, much the way the utilities do with ratepayer funds, let's try and mirror that in some way with taxpayer funds. And, I have to say, it's definitely a different way to think of the program. I think that if I were with the department, I'd be a little bit nervous, but I'm hoping that the department knows that there's a lot of people that are willing to help. And, there was some talk about putting maybe an advisory committee in here. We decided not to do that, but the department has been open to doing that sort of approach, getting a lot of people around the table to answer those questions on an ongoing basis, and I hope they do that here too.
Discussion. Okay. I just like to make the one point that it's extremely generous and it's dollars that we could either expand to make the program more usable for more people, or we could take those dollars that we're putting into this generous program and put them into such as school funding.
All right. Thank you for those comments and questions. Any other questions or comments for the panel? Thank you very much. We do have a motion on the table to adopt the Dash 2 amendments, and lo and behold, also what appeared while we were talking.
There is a fiscal statement out in front of you, which is a fiscal light, just to move this to tax credits.
Oops, this is not the right one. So everyone should have that. It says 688-2. And with that, after you get a chance to read that, everybody.
Are we moving this to?
We're moving it to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits. Okay. So is there any objection to adopting the Dash 2s? Okay. Seeing none, amendments are adopted, and I'll take another motion.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 688 as amended by the Dash 2s to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Tax Credits by prior reference.
And I think that should be the Joint Committee on Tax Credits, by the way, but Thank you, Senator Przanski. Senator Przanski moves Senate Bill 688 as amended with the dash twos to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits by prior reference. I had to take a breath on that one. Is there any discussion on this? Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
No.
Aye. So with that, the motion carries and the bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Tax Credits. Again, we do not need a carrier for that because it's going to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits. We'll close the the work session on Senate Bill 688. And we will open up the last work session of the day on Senate bills. We'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 736. And Beth, can you provide a description of the amendments?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there are two amendments in front of you, the dash ones and the dash twos. We do have a fiscal statement and a no revenue impact statement on the dash twos. We do not yet have any fiscal statement on the dash one. And I believe Kurt Melcher is here who can talk about the amendments.
Okay. Kurt? Can you come up and just for clarification, the chair had asked for these amendments just to be introduced, and I asked the Department of Fish and Wildlife to come up and discuss the amendments because they are probably the best person to make sure and give the right description. So thanks for coming over. I know you have pinnipeds over there, so.
Thank you. Yeah, Chair Dingfelder. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I believe the House committee did finish up with the bills I was watching there, so I'm in good shape here just the rest of this afternoon. So just briefly to go over the two amendments, the dash one amendment, in both cases, both amendments are essentially replacing the previous bill language. That were in the original Senate Bill 736. The dash one amendment then does a couple of things. To start off with, it does give the Fish and Wildlife Commission the authority to permit the use of seine gear in the Columbia River in the same areas where commercial fishing currently occurs with gillnet gear. Allows the commission to also permit that the use of those alternative gears as a means to help assess the effectiveness of those. It goes on, though, to also then restrict the use of both the alternative gears and the traditional gillnet and tanglenet gears to three conditions, if you will, in off-channel fishery enhancement areas as specified by the commission. The commission would have the authority to use those gears in the main stem as a management tool to prevent hatchery-produced fish from straying into tributaries of the lower Columbia River as specified in rule of the commission. And then lastly, would only be authorized when salmon returns are projected to exceed the capacity of fishing seasons adopted under the wildlife laws. And just for clarification, that refers to recreational fishing seasons, which are generally adopted under the wildlife laws of the state, whereas our commercial fishing seasons are adopted under the commercial fishing laws of the state. So essentially, the commission would annually make a determination as to whether, annually or perhaps more than annually, it could actually occur even in season, would make a determination as to whether the projected returns exceed the capacity of the recreational fishery before allowing any commercial fishing.
Okay. That's the dash ones.
The dash ones. We'll move on to the dash twos. The dash twos are a little more complicated, but there's a little bit more lengthy. To begin with, the dash twos prohibit the use of gillnets in the main stem Columbia River during the months of March through May, so the typical spring Chinook fishing periods. So it essentially prohibits the use of that gear during March through May, except in off-channel fishery enhancement areas. And then, but then it does go on to have an operative date for that prohibition of January 1, 2015. So essentially, beginning in January 2015, this bill would prohibit the commercial fishery from operating in the main stem during the months of March, April, and May. It also, this Dash 2 amendment also creates, I guess, for lack of a better term, a moratorium, if you will, on both new permits in the Columbia River commercial fishery, but also essentially restricts or prohibits folks from renewing their current permit if they were not active in the prior 12 months. So that's on page 2 of the bill, and I guess I'll just read it directly. An individual may not renew a permit issued pursuant to 508.775 in the 12-month pursuant to that if in the 12-month period prior the individual applies for a renewal permit, the individual did not engage in activities under that permit. So the commission would have to go through, look at landing statistics, determine which permits were eligible to renew. Those that were not eligible to renew would essentially go away. They would not be renewable at any point in the future. Then the bill goes on to, or the amendment goes on to direct the department to evaluate the existing off-channel fishery areas for potential enhancements in terms of time and area, and also to evaluate additional or new off-channel areas, and specifically names the North Portland Harbor, which is in the main stem Columbia, that area near Hayden Island, and I believe it's Terminal 6, if I remember correctly. It asks us, the department, to report back by October of 2012 on our evaluation of those new areas and on our evaluation of enhancing any of the existing areas. And I think that pretty much sums it up. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Can you talk a little bit about the fiscal, since we finally have that?
Yes, thank you, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. So we did receive the request for fiscal on the Dash 2 amendments and the Dash 1 amendments yesterday. I had staff working on those. Well, we finished up the fiscal on the Dash 2 amendment actually late this afternoon or mid-afternoon this afternoon. To conduct an evaluation of this of new off-channel fishing areas is fairly intensive. We have a fiscal impact statement of about $300,000. I think it's I don't have it in front of me here, so I apologize for that. I believe it's $330,000. Includes several positions. We need to intensively, if you will, fish in the area prior to the implementation of the area to determine if there's any non-local stocks in that fishing area. And then also we need to do water quality and benthic sampling work to determine if, in fact, it's a suitable area to rear fish or hold fish for acclimation.
Okay. Thank you, Kurt. Any questions for the department?
Of course.
Senator Olson.
Of course I have some. How are you today,
I'm
Kurt?
Sure.
Thanks for coming in. Question for you. If in Dash 2 you study the enhanced areas and determine that there are other areas available, could you give me an approximate cost to develop those into a safe area, if you will?
Sure. Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Olson. So, again, this is going to be very rudimentary estimate, and in that I have not prepared specifically for that question. But the in general, I think it depends in great degree on where you're going to get the fish that you put in the new select area. So if you're moving existing production from a current facility to acclimation and release in the select area, it's less costly than if you're actually increasing your production at current facilities in order to have fish to move to those off-channel areas. I think as a general guideline, I think we expect that it costs about $1 million to, when you talk about needing pilings, that is pilings in the river to anchor and hold the net pens, needing net pen infrastructure investment in the startup. So startup costs more, in the initial years, but it's certainly in the million-dollar range, I would expect.
So in 2013-15, if we decide that there are good areas to build in, but we don't have the money to build it, then basically what we've done is we've banned the gillnetters from the main stem of the Columbia but have not provided any further areas for them to fish in. Would that be correct?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, yeah, I think that's a fair description. And it may be also that we evaluate other areas and determine for a variety of reasons that they're not adequate. They may have too high a non-local stocks or North Portland Harbor. I'm familiar with the area. I've been on the water there many times, but I'm not certain what the water quality situation is in terms of rearing fish, holding fish in that area. So there are other, I guess, off-ramps, if you will, that could make some of the new areas not be preferred alternatives.
Follow up? Are either of these amendments ODFW amendments?
Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Olson, we certainly worked with the Senator and others on the language, really just to make sure that the legislative language was capturing the intent. The Department's been neutral on these throughout the process.
I'd like to make one final point, if I could. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows that I actually wrote an amendment, and I would like to say for the record that these two amendments are not even close to what I wrote, so I'd just like that on the record.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Yes. Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Senator Prusinski.
Kurt, in your description of the Dash 2s, you went into, I believe it's Section 5, talking about how permits will be reviewed. When does that start?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Prusinski. So since this bill has an emergency clause and is effective January 1 of 2012, I would expect that we would be reviewing the 2011 fishery participation, basically the 12 months prior to renewal in 2012 to determine eligibility, whether a permit was renewable or not.
Okay, so if I understand, I do have a follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
So if I understand what you're saying is that people with permits, and specifically, I guess what I'm going to say, the gill netters, if they have not met the, whatever the criteria is going to be, they can lose their license, their permits, at the end of 2012 or the beginning of 2012?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Prusinski, I believe that's correct. We would... So at the time of renewal, we would have to look at their activity, and we, of course, have all their landings are essentially tabulated and kept in a database. We can look back at every permit's landing history, really, for the last 20-plus years. We would look at that landing history and see if it met the terms of this bill, which is essentially, and I'm using my own, I'm interpreting here a little bit, but I'm interpreting the term that if in the 12-month period before the individual applies for renewal of the permit, the individual did not engage in activities authorized under the permit, I'm interpreting that to mean if they did not have any landings in the prior year, essentially in the prior 12 months, that they would not be able to renew their permit.
And the landing means what?
A landing, Chair Dingfelder, Senator Prusinski, a landing is the act of delivering fish to a processor where the fish then go on a state fish ticket. The fisherman gets paid based on that fish ticket, and we, the state, collects our ad valorem landing tax based on that fish ticket.
One other question, please.
Mm-hmm. Follow up.
If for some reason this fishery is shut down during a period like that, is there an escape clause for...
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Prusinski, not explicit in this bill. We do have in our commercial fishing permit statutes, we do have a permit review board which reviews folks' permits whose renewals are denied. Right now there are renewal requirements. You have to renew every year. You can't skip a year. If you skip a year, you lose the ability to renew your permit. We have a permit review board, which is basically a citizen panel, that when someone is denied the ability to renew their permit, They can appeal that to their permit review board. Their review board looks at the conditions and the circumstances surrounding their renewal or lack thereof, and then makes a recommendation to the commission whether or not to renew a permit or not. So I think technically it's not addressed in this bill language. I think it could go through our permit review board process.
Any other questions?
No questions.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Madam Chair, I'd like to take a recess.
Okay. We are at recess right now. work session on Senate Bill 736. We have the dash ones and the dash twos before us, so I'll take a motion, accept a motion on the dash ones.
Chair Dingfelder, I move to adopt this dash ones, Senate Bill 36, stated 4-2011.
Okay, Senator Haas moves to adopt the Senate Bill 736-1 amendments dated 4-19-2011. Is that what you said? Okay.
That's right.
And any discussion?
I have a question.
Yeah?
If we adopt the dash 1, and then what do we do then, adopt the dash 2?
They are not, what, no, if we, if we adopt the dash 1, then we won't adopt the dash 2.
Okay. That's right. No.
So, any other questions? Any discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
No.
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 Aye. Without the constitutional majority, that motion fails. We'll take another motion on the dash twos.
Senator Dingfelter, I move to adopt Senate Bill 736-2 amendments dated 4-2011.
And they are going to another committee, correct?
Well, it was just
the amendment. This is the amendment. Okay. We are moving the dash two amendments, and they are dated 4-2011. Any discussion? Okay. Any objections?
Yes.
Okay. You want to call the roll to the dash twos?
Senator Haas?
Aye.
Senator Pazowski?
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
No.
No.
Aye. That the amendments are adopted, and now I'll take a motion for the full bill.
Chair Dingfelder, I move Senate Bill 736 as amended without recommendation to the Committee on Rules.
Okay, Senator Haas moves Senate Bill 736 as amended with the dash twos without recommendation to the Committee on Rules. And do we have to send it to the Senate President's office first since we'd already talked to him?
No, you can do it the way you just
okay,
did.
Okay, great. So is there any discussion?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Przanski.
Madam Chair, in hearing the testimony on the amendments, I was uncomfortable based on some of the information. Based on our conversation, I understand the amendments were not drafted to the way you had explained them to me. I've agreed for a courtesy vote, and I will honor that as a courtesy vote to rules. I would not at this time, would have not given a courtesy vote to Ways and Means. I believe the bill needs additional work. I believe by putting in the rules, it will allow that to occur.
Great. Thank you, Senator Przanski. And I will, I don't know if anybody else wants to make any comments before I do.
I do.
Go ahead.
I didn't know if that was appropriate.
It's fine.
I'm uncomfortable with this bill. I think with, I know this has been going on for 30, 40, 50, 100 years. It's interesting that the two young freshmen get to deal with a measure of this import at this time. I would prefer to be able to work on this through the summer and find a position that everyone could agree with. It's a difficult situation. It pits people against people and economies against economies. And it's unrealistic in this day and age that we have to do that. It just absolutely amazes me that we have to do something of this important nature. It's a difficult decision. It's one I come to not easily, but that's my point.
Thank you, Senator Olson, for your comments. Anybody else like to make any comments, Senator Thompson?
I'd like to add to Senator Olson's comments. People that have been in this building for years and years still struggle with this issue. And for rookie senators to come down here in 2.5, 3 months to have to think they can figure this out, I'm not ready for that yet. And I'll work with Senator Olson in the interim.
Did you want to add something else?
Yeah, I can't pass this up. Welcome to the big league. That's why you get paid the big bucks. And the other thing I'll say is the reason I'm giving the courtesy vote is because it is going to rules and it's going with no recommendation.
Okay, and as chair, I will say that we're sending this to rules because there are some changes in the amendment that didn't come out exactly the way the chair had intended them. So I think there's a little more work to be done. And it sounds like there's some folks that are interested in working on it, and it sounds like that will continue. So this will be moved to the Rules Committee where there can be further work. And with that, the clerk will call the roll.
Sarah Huff?
Aye.
Senator Thomas?
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Thompson?
Aye.
Senator Olson?
No.
Senator
Aye. And with that, the motion carries, and the bill is sent to Rules. Without recommendation, there is no carrier because that will occur in the Rules Committee. With that, Beth, let me close the work session on Senate Bill 736. And before everybody scurries away,
that's it.
Let me make sure all the Senate bills are done. Thank you very much, committee members, for your attention. We almost get out in time, and now we have to move on to judiciary.
Almost
so
together.
I will adjourn, and next week we'll be working House bills.
Okay.
House bills.
All right.
Committee is adjourned.
Okay.